Hello, everybody, and welcome to Patriotic Weekly Review, episode number 73. And we are live tonight on DLive and RadioAlbion.com. And we also have Entropy up and running if you want to watch the show through Entropy. And it seems like we don't have any technical problems this week, which is a major bonus after last week's little delayed start, which was always a little bit annoying. Things don't always run quite as smoothly here on DLive as they used to do on YouTube, but we soldier on. Anyway, we are live now, and the replay will be on BitChute. All of the replays are on BitChute, and if you go to my BitChute channel, you can find a full list of all previous episodes, all 72 previous episodes, in fact, of PWR, and all my previous weekly videos. So please go and find them. They are there in their full uncensored forms, unlike on YouTube, where my videos became heavily censored and many of them were removed. So please support me on BitChute. Now, if you would like to contribute to the show, that would be very, very warmly accepted. You can contribute via Entropy. I'm just popping the Entropy link in the live chat now. That is on DLive, in the DLive chat. And if you contribute on Entropy by making a super chat, you will have your comment or question read out live on air. You can also ask other questions via Entropy, and those questions are voted on. The best ones, the ones that get voted up, are read out every week, and the worst ones, well, we give those a miss. So that is Entropy. The link is in the chat. It's also on my Twitter and on my Telegram. If you want to contribute in other ways, you can contribute via Bitcoin. And my Bitcoin address can be found on my BitChute. It can also be found if you write to me at mark@thefallofwesternman.com. I can also give you bank details if you wish to make contributions via bank transfer. So those are the three ways you can make financial contributions or contribute to the show. They are via Entropy, via Bitcoin, or via writing to me at mark@thefallofwesternman.com. And if you have any issues, problems, or any questions about the show or any ways I can help you, you can also write to me at that address. Now, this week, it is my birthday week. Later this week, I am 40, the big 4-0. So this is a momentous week. I'm not looking forward to it. I'm not sure if I ever thought I would get to 40 years old, but it is happening. And I hope I don't look too haggard or worn out as I reach that age. I do notice there are a few more gray hairs, but I think those gray hairs have started sprouting more readily ever since I became a dad. So that will be later this week, but it is my birthday show. And anyone in the chat that says I look older than 40 will be instantly muted. Only joking. Now, I am bringing my birthday in with a bit of a bang, because later this week, I have two other shows. Tomorrow night, I will be debating a member, or the commander-in-chief, as he calls himself, of an organization called the Black Hammer Organization. His name is, I believe I'm pronouncing it correct, Ghazi Kodzo. Now, this was originally meant to be on Jason's channel, and Jason was moderating it, but Ghazi seems to have put out my channel by mistake and has been advertising it to be on my channel here on DLive. So we will be doing it on this channel. However, Jason will be logging in here and moderating my channel for me. So this will be here tomorrow night, 9 p.m. UK time, 4 p.m. Eastern. It will be a debate on the future of race relations in the West. And I think you know what my point will be, that we need peaceful separation and we need to live in our own respective ethno states. And I'll be making that point live tomorrow night. And Friday night, myself and Laura will be doing a special stream at 7 p.m. UK time, that's 2 p.m. Eastern time, about the exciting developments with Patriotic Alternative. So please make sure you tune into that also. So it's a packed birthday week for me, And tonight we have a packed show for you. And we're obviously going to be spending most of the show talking about the Trump-Biden debate. It is big news. It is election season. It only happens once every 4 years. And we will be having quite a few American guests on in the next few weeks. Next week, we have Styx Hexenhammer. The week after that, we have Dr. David Duke. The week after that, it will be British guests, smaller content producers, and a bit of an open mic night. And the week following that, it will be Adam Green. So we have a real packed schedule coming up, and a lot of it will be based around the American presidential election. And I'm sure before that, we will do a predictions night with some American guests. I'll get Laura on as well. And we will do a bit of a predictions night. And on election night or shortly afterwards, we'll do a breakdown of the results. So there's plenty to look forward to. Now, before we get over to our special guest, Greg, Jason, what have you been up to this week, my friend? And who is on tap?
Well, there's been quite a little bit going on this week, and the first thing I'd like to do is spotlight one of our community members, and that is Raymond Foster. He is a content creator in the White Positive sphere, going free explicitly and sharing white well-being content all over Australia. He is the Southern Star, if you will, Southern Hemisphere. He was physically attacked recently for being a white positive. He didn't see it coming. Some people jumped him, and we're going to find out more about what happened with him. Hopefully sooner rather than later. But anti-whites were putting up posters about him with his face, his name, and saying this guy is, and then using some sort of anti-white slur repeatedly and attack him where you see him. Of course, that's illegal in Australia. Now, our good thoughts and hearts go out to Raymond as he heals. I don't know how exactly bad it was, but we all know that our Australian brothers and sisters are a tough lot. So I know that he can take it. TAP will be Friday. 5 or 5:30 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, and we're going to have the great Tim Murdoch on, talking about all themes of meme and meme magic. We'd also, pardon me, you mentioned, Mark, that I guess we're going to be on your channel for this coming debate. Folks, look for that. It's going to be a wild one, I can assure you. Finally, Crucible is available. You can see over my shoulder here that we have signs now. The book is available in print, and it should be available in Kindle right now for you all, brand new, to find out. Just finished that up last night. It just is up to Amazon how quickly or slowly they're going to make it available, but should be available on Kindle probably by the end of the day if it's not already available, and I'll be dropping the links over the course of the stream. Really glad to see Greg with us today. Can't wait to talk about all things Donald Trump and American politics. And happy birthday, my dear brother, Mark Hollett. Doesn't look a day over 59.
Well, thank you for that, Jason. Very kind of you to say so. As I said, I blame my rapid aging on the child. It's all the child's fault. Now, without further ado, it's a great pleasure and honor, as always, to invite Greg Johnson on the show. Greg is a fantastic contributor. He is an amazing orator. He is a fantastic writer. And he is, of course, the editor of Countercurrents, which is one of the cornerstones of the nationalist world. And with the Trump-Biden debate happening last night, there are a few better people we could have invited on to discuss this momentous occasion. And as I said, we'll be having plenty more American guests in the next few weeks to discuss the presidential election, and we will be doing some election specials. Now, Greg is always very, very busy promoting white well-being and fighting for our cause. So before we go into the debate talk tonight, Greg, please tell us what you've been up to, my friend. Tell us where we can find your work and fill us in on anything that our audience needs to know.
Well, Mark, thanks for having me back. I really appreciate it. Happy birthday to you. I'm excited to hear about this, and I wish you many more. So, and I know that you're going to be fighting with this for all the rest of your life. So this week has been a really good week so far. Monday, I got up and I sat down to send a message to Jim Goad. Because last week, I actually wrote to him and I said, you know, if you want to write for Countercurrents twice a week rather than Talkie Mag, I will match what they pay you. and I'll give you complete freedom to choose your topics, because he was complaining to me that he had his freedom to choose topics increasingly encroached upon by the editor there. And this was last week. I think it was last Thursday. He said, I just got some bad news today. And I thought, okay, well, I'll check back on Monday. So I checked back in on Monday. And just as I sat down and opened Twitter to send him a message, he sent me a message. It popped right in front of me. It says, I just quit Talkie Mag. And I said, holy moly. So we talked on Skype, and he agreed to start writing for Countercurrents starting next week. He's going to write for us twice a week starting next week. Now, Talkie Mag was really put on the map by Jim Goad. It had sort of limped along, not really having much of an audience for a few years after it started. And then Mandalina Theodorakopoulos, Taki's daughter, took over as editor in 2010. And a bit later that year, Jim Goad came on board. And Goad brought other people with him. And by 2015 or so, when the alt-right thing and Trump and everything was blowing up, Talkie Mag was in the top 10,000 sites on Alexa. And since then, it has declined. Instead of really seizing the moment, in fact, the editor sort of got cold feet about all this stuff, this Trump and populism and these racisms and stuff like that, and sort of started throttling the stuff that was actually bringing people there, because it was a free speech zone and people could talk truthfully about the things that the rest of the media, basically the rest of the mainstream media, lies about. So anyway, what happened is they started losing writers and they started declining. Then the comment section was closed down entirely. And they have dropped from being in the top 10,000 to being around 115,000. They've dropped out of the top 100,000 on Alexa. Now, Countercurrents right now is around 187,000, I think. 3 months ago, we were 171,000 slots lower on Alexa. Why the additional traffic? Why the new traffic? Well, multiculturalism is burning America down and has been for more than 3 months. So we're more relevant, basically. So we started growing and growing. I think bringing Goad on is a great, heralds great things. He has a huge following of his own. New people are going to come to Countercurrents and read the other stuff that's there. And I'm aiming for the top 100,000 in Alexa. And then I'm going to aim for the top 10. There's no reason to rein in one's ambitions. One just has to take it step by reasonable step. So yeah, this is huge news. I've respected Goad for 20 years. And as a writer, I think he's always been a brilliant writer. Sometimes I didn't agree with takes he had or didn't like particular books or whatever. But, you know, he is, I think, today, probably, well, put it this way, in 20 or 40 or 50 years' time, people are going to talk about him in the same breath as they talk about H.L. Mencken, as a journalistic force in America, as a stylist, and so forth. So I think this is a real coup. Countercurrents published for years until he died, Leo Yankevich, who I think is was the greatest living poet in the English language. We publish Tito Perdue, or until recently we published Tito, and we published 6 books by him. And I think he's the greatest living novelist in the English language. And now we have Jim Goad. So I'm very, very happy about that. And everything else just sort of pales by comparison. Although yesterday I got some interesting news about another person who might be joining Countercurrents on a regular basis. I'm going to hold off on the announcement about that. But when I told my staff, they were like, they were just like visibly delighted, you know? And then today I got up, because I didn't watch it last night. I got up and watched the replay of the debate. And I was very pleasantly surprised. I thought I was going to need to take a tranquilizer or something before I watched this thing. I thought it was going to be so cringy, I would do permanent physical damage to myself. And much to my surprise and pleasure, I thought it was a pretty good debate and a real triumph for Donald Trump. So I'm anxious to talk about that.
Well, so are we. I'm not quite as enthusiastic about the debate. I wasn't bowled over by it. In fact, I actually forgot it was happening. I woke up this morning at about 5:30 a.m. and my phone was lit up with messages about it. All of the news alerts were about the debate. It was trending on Twitter, as you'd expect. Most of the Twitter trends seemed absolutely ridiculous and were obviously put there by Twitter. The biggest one that was trending was about white supremacism, of course, and how Trump endorsed white supremacism, apparently, on the debate. And I thought, I'm going to look forward to watching this. So I got up, I usually get up at about 6 a.m., but I got up slightly earlier and I began answering emails and doing a little bit of work, listening to the debate. And I've got to say, I was a little bit underwhelmed. And I was also a little bit disappointed in Trump, mainly because I think Trump made far, far better points. In fact, I'll go into my analysis in a minute. I think Trump did very well. I think overall Trump was the winner. I think Biden is not a credible speaker. He's not credible in debates. And I think he's also somebody that stumbles over his words a lot. And it almost seems as if he's trying to remember a script that someone force-fed him 30 minutes before the debate. It doesn't look natural, and he gets very flustered. He also seems to have a vein on one side of his head that seems to throb quite a bit when he's getting into trouble and when he's visibly flustered. And all of this gives the impression that he wouldn't be a good world leader. You couldn't imagine him facing off with somebody like Vladimir Putin or a strong leader that was willing to actually put him on the spot. He doesn't look like a credible candidate. And as such, I thought Trump won. But I thought Trump won almost by default. And I thought Trump let himself down a lot, because although he seemed to be facing off not just against Biden, but also against the moderator, Chris Wallace, I think that he spent too much time trying to talk over Biden. And I think Biden should have been given more rope to hang himself, because when Biden was given a chance to give an answer, he often gave an answer that so obviously gave Trump a easy open goal to shoot at. So I was slightly disappointed. You were obviously quite happy, Greg. What about you, Jason? What was your feelings on the debate?
Well, I definitely thought what all sane people or unbiased people are thinking when they look at something like this, because and I'm definitely unbiased. I say that we need another 4 years of Trump, because we don't need all these bills and laws and treaties and resolutions and acts that I've been going over for the past 6 weeks or so every Sunday that Biden and crew will immediately make into law if he were to win the election, and which would put a, if you've been listening to anything that I've been sharing on Sundays, put a swift end to every all the work that we're doing. It would all be made quite illegal, but under various angles. So we definitely need 4 more years of Trump. But of course, I have called Trump, and I still believe him to be the first Israeli president of the United States. And he is, so I'm unbiased, but he clearly won the debate. It was the criticisms of, and we can talk about this over the course of the show, the criticisms of Trump, I believe, are largely born out of his, I don't know if it was his inability because of the circumstance or just his refusal to cite all of the sorts of things that he could have cited over the course of that debate to demonstrate the great success and achievements that he has had. And when I say great, I don't mean that I'm endorsing any particular endeavors of his. I mean great in the sense of they were literally large in scope, and they were really ambitious objectives that he set out to achieve. Certainly the improvement of the economy, this handling of COVID, and many other things where he's had just enormous success, especially success by the metrics of the anti-whites, success with getting non-white people another leg up above white people in the United States. He's done a fabulous job at that. And instead of citing those things, he engaged in some other conversations. He limped those directions, but then didn't cite those things. So most of the criticisms that I would imagine, I haven't had an opportunity to look at talking heads. I've been too busy, but I would imagine most of the criticisms from those on the right are going to be, he didn't cite all of these wonderful things that he's done for non-white people as well as he could. Didn't cite all of the good things that he did to handle the COVID crisis. He didn't cite, and we could just go on and on. And so therefore they're critical of him for that. Of course, the anti-whites who call themselves Democrats and progressives and the like, they're going to be honing directly in on, and it sounds like maybe the both of you have probably seen this, the fact that he didn't denounce or reject or what have you, didn't set fire to the phrase white supremacy. And this is, I don't believe that Trump is, and we know, I mean, I'm very confident that he's not white positive in any way, shape or form. But what he is he's not a man that's going to allow himself to get pushed around, certainly in public. And that's essentially what they were doing to him there. They were trying to push him in a direction and get him to submit to saying that this was a significant problem and that needed, therefore, to be denounced. He's also a sane, lucid thinker. He can see the world. He knows that there is no overwhelming or ominous threat of some Nazi takeover of the United States. And he didn't want to give in to that either. And clearly, when he had the opportunity to do so, he wanted to talk about the anti-white violence. Now, we can talk a bit later as we go through this of where I thought he could have done a lot better. But he clearly won the debate. And Biden, and I'll just say this, the debate was won before either of them spoke. And when I say won before either of them even spoke, I'm talking about, and this is where it can get complicated. And fortunately, I'm with two very bright individuals who can think about like the subtle hues of the different subject matter that we cover here. But the person that is on the fence still about a Biden or a Trump, they don't know very much about the policies. They didn't necessarily glean much from this sort of maelstrom, this cacophony of a debate where they were both kind of yelling at each other at times. Maybe, if anything, over the course of the debate, they might have been put off a little bit by Trump interrupting a little bit more, but they would have been equally put off by Biden's name calling. I mean, just this like throwing the names at Trump like he were not in his 70s, but were 17 or something, or 7 years old. But I think the debate for a lot of those fence sitters was won when both of these candidates walked out, stepped up to the lectern, and you could see them both on the screen side by side. And Trump looked like the healthy man that he is. He looked like the man that could, that's doing these rally after rally after rally in the midst of doing probably the most or one of the most challenging jobs, certainly as somebody who's not rabidly anti-white on all the different issues. He looked healthy. He looked alive. He looked vivacious. He had energy. And on the other side, you had a corpse. You had somebody who looked like a corpse. I mean, Mark pointed out that he had like a vein going, just barely. I mean, he came out there looking sickly. He did a couple of these wide-eyed things right away where you see this in older people who are sort of, you know, tilting into senility and trying to like get his bearings of where he was. Mark pointed out I think maybe Greg did too, the searching for words and the fumbling for words. But I really think when they first walked out, you saw them side by side. A lot of those fence setters said, well, there's the healthy one. And there's one that's worse off than my great grandpappy who's dangling both feet over the grave right now. And that doesn't bode well. People, they're not able to break down all of the duties that a president has to do. But what they are able to do is they are able to see that, well, a president does have to have these big conversations with people like Putin. They do have to have these big economic councils. They do have to decide what's going to happen with the totality of the country. And this guy looks like it's a challenge for him to figure out, have I taken all of my morning meds? It's been 30 minutes and I just can't remember. So we can get into this conversation. It's going to be an exciting show today, folks, and share your opinions over the course of the show with us in the live chat. We'll be taking a look, but those are my opening thoughts, Mark.
Well, thank you. I'm going to go up to Greg in a minute. Please make sure you like and share the stream. And remember, you can contribute if you want through Entropy. The link is in the chat now. And we will be answering questions in the second half. So please put your questions and thoughts to us and they will be asked to the panel. But my thoughts very quickly, I'm going to go through the positives, what I thought were the positives, and then we'll go through what we think were the negatives. I just want to really quickly say three big positives for Trump. He looked very healthy. He spoke very clearly and he looked like a winner. Out of the two of them, he looked like the healthy horse. He looked like the one that you would bet on if the two were going to take their shirts off and have a brawl. Secondly, I felt the fact that Trump didn't break down and start groveling when he was accused of supporting white supremacists, that was another major, major bonus, not just for us, but for white Americans. He didn't go down the route of groveling, condemning, using leftist language, talking about white supremacists, Nazis, racists. He didn't go down that route. That was very, very good. Now, I can't imagine anyone else standing for the Republicans staying strong on that point. But my biggest, or the most impressive thing I thought about Donald Trump's performance is when he was questioned on his executive order to repeal legislation that forced white people to sit in special lessons during their employment hours to be taught how not to be racist, which obviously we know is code for how to hate themselves. He said that he repealed that because those lessons were teaching Americans to hate America. And that was really code, I felt, for teaching white Americans to hate themselves and to hate what whites see as America and what whites see as being American. And I thought that was absolutely fantastic. Those three things were major, major bonuses. He was healthy. He refused to condemn white supremacy or to bend the knee to accusations of being racist. And he was honest when he was talking about progressive anti-white policy, which he stated clearly was implemented to make people hate America. And I think all of those points were very good. And to top it off, I said I'd give 3 points. He didn't back down on anything. And when he had what he thought was a knockout blow, he kept repeating it. He kept repeating his points. He kept going over them. He was very confident in what he said. And I think all of those things bode very well for Trump, because Trump historically gets better through the debates. If you remember last time, people weren't sure about his first performance against Hillary, but his second and third performances got better and better. He's very much like a boxer. Boxers often come out, they throw a few jabs, they feel out their opponents, and a good boxer grows throughout a fight because he reads his opponent, he gets to know him, and then over the course of the fight, he takes him to pieces. And I think Trump laid a very, very good foundation. He wasn't perfect, and we'll go through our negatives in a minute, but I think he laid a good foundation for being better later on for the second and third debate. And I think he certainly performed better against Biden in the first debate than he did against Hillary in the first debate. So, Greg, Jason's given his positives. I've given my positives. What were your biggest positives from last night's debate?
Well, I, first of all, thought that, Trump did seem healthy. He was pink and healthy, and he didn't seem old and frail, whereas Biden really did seem old and frail. And what's with his eyes? Doesn't he have blue eyes? He looked like he had black eyes. He had these weird, glassy, crab-like eyes. It's something wrong with him. He looks like a reanimated corpse.
Greg, let me just jump in really quickly. You probably are speaking to the effects of the amphetamine cocktail that he would have been given to bring some lucidity.
Yeah,
to
it's dementia. Very, very likely. Trump seemed spontaneous. He seemed fresh. Biden seemed stale and rehearsed. He was just spitting out talking points. He was frequently mangling things and getting close to being incoherent in various areas. And he just came off as a mean, frail old man who's losing it. When people start losing it, they get mean, right? They start lashing out. And Biden seemed like a mean, frail old man. Trump never seemed like he was getting flustered to me. He always seemed like he was in control, never lost his cool. I was a little bit, this is how I would have coached Trump into this debate. And I would have been wrong. My coaching would be just to go out there and be gentle with the guy because he's a senile, weak old guy, and people will pity him if you beat up on him. But he didn't come off as weak as I thought he would. He just came off as an arrogant, mean old prick. And frankly, it was good that Trump kept jabbing at him. Because you could see that his composure was very weak and unwinding. So I thought that Trump actually handled this fairly well. It wouldn't have been the way that I would have coached him to do it. But then Biden threw a surprise. He was more coherent than I thought he was and less pathetic than I thought he would be. And therefore, more formidable. But I think Trump basically counterpunched effectively to that. Now, yes, Mark, I do think it would have been good if he had given Biden more room to hang himself sometimes. There's no question about it.
These are the negatives. You can't do the negatives now, Greg.
Yeah. Okay, well, I'm just trying to, you know, acknowledge some of the things that you said along the way. What else did I think was good? I thought a lot of his answers were really good. I thought he seemed, when he made little statements, they were often very, very fresh and cogent and well stated. And he's not the most articulate president, let's face it. And it was a real gift that they nominated Biden, who was practically the only Democrat less articulate than Trump. So overall, I thought he gave a very positive impression to me. He seemed strong. He seemed fresh. He seemed spontaneous. He seemed in control. And he had better answers generally on things. And yes, he didn't cuck on stuff where lesser men, namely any Republican, would have cucked. So all told, I was fairly satisfied. Another thing that was a positive is he did not give Black America or Israel a prolonged sloppy blowjob, which was the thing that I was really fearing, because that is truly disgusting to me. And I almost just gave up on Trump entirely after this Platinum Plan thing was rolled out. And I'm so relieved that that was not the centerpiece of this debate.
Thank you. I think it's very good points. And we're obviously in quite a bit of agreement so far. But let's do the negatives now. I'll kick it off and then we'll go over to Jason, over to you, because we're moving in that order. But I thought Trump was a little bit too combative. And that might seem odd because you want your man to go out there and start swinging. Everyone wants that. Again, I'll go with a boxing analogy. When you've got a fighter and you support that fighter and you're at ringside and you want him to go and do something, you want people to see what your man can do. And a good analogy here would be Mike Tyson. Now, I would say, and this might annoy a few people, but I don't think there was any better boxer in his prime than Mike Tyson. When Mike Tyson was in his prime, he would have murdered anybody. There's no man that would have stood against him. He was just an absolute demon. He was fast. He was powerful. And when there was a Mike Tyson fight, you knew what you were going to get. Everyone was waiting for it. They were waiting for Mike to get in the ring and knock someone out. And Trump has got that ability. But unfortunately, he didn't seem to land those knockout blows because he spent too much time, in my opinion, interrupting and putting on a bit of a scrappy show in terms of constantly talking over Biden. Now, I think Biden is a fool. I think he's an old fool. I don't think he's up to the job. I think he'd make a terrible president. I don't think he has the capacity to think on his feet. But that's a good thing for Trump, because I feel that Chris Wallace asked Biden a couple of difficult questions, and I think Trump made some very good points that left Biden on the back foot. But rather than letting Biden sort of flounder and say stupid things, because Biden's okay when he's clearly coming out with something that they've drilled into him. He had some very well prepared statements. But when he was actually asked to fight, when he was actually asked to return fire and to duck and to weave and to flow with the punches, he was completely floundering. And even the even some of the questions from Chris Wallace left him umming and ahhing. But Trump almost got him out of that by talking over him too much and trying to interject. And it meant the debate didn't flow as freely. And because Trump muddied the water at those times, Biden didn't have time to get flustered, which didn't give Trump what I was hoping for, which was one of those epic openings where he could have just given him that superb metaphorical uppercut, which would have floored him and left him out for the 10 count. And I think Trump's interruptions hurt him. Now, interruptions can be fantastic, don't get me wrong. And in structured debate, I'm not a fan of interruptions, but if one is particularly cutting or funny, it is worth it. Same with low blows. You don't want to see lots of low blows. You don't want to see lots of personal attacks, but the occasional low blow or personal attack, if done correctly, is brilliant. And one of the greatest interruptions in the history of all debates was, of course, Donald Trump when talking to Hillary. And he interrupted and simply said, "Yes, you'd be in prison." And when he said that, the entire audience erupted in laughter. Even her supporters started laughing because it was funny, it was well-timed, it was used sparingly, but he overused those interruptions and it broke up the flow of the debate. And I think he let himself down there and he didn't give Biden the rope to hang himself with. And if there's one thing I think that Biden would have done if he'd have been allowed to ramble, is he would have made a fool of himself. He would have made a fool of himself. And as he floundered, that would have given Trump everything he needed to step in there and finish it. And I hope Trump learns from this. And that's my other slight reservation with Trump, is sometimes when he does make errors, sometimes when he does make mistakes, he doesn't acknowledge them. And he doesn't acknowledge them because he's used to being right and he's very strong-headed. And being strong-headed is good. Being right a lot of the time is also good. But sometimes that can cloud your judgment. And that's my only worry, that Trump won't learn from that for the next debate. But this is maybe a bit of a minor quibble. And to balance what I've said, at times it did seem like Trump was debating two people at once, because Chris Wallace didn't seem to ask very many neutral questions. Everything that he asked, bar one question, which really dug at Biden, the majority of questions seemed to be big digs at Trump and the kind of questions that a smug CNN journalist might throw to Trump, hoping that it would win him a promotion or allow him to write a front page article. So overall, very good. But that was my slight negative. Did you have any negatives? Greg, do you have any negatives? And then you next, Jason. Well, Greg, do you have any negatives? Was there anything in there that disappointed you? Because you seem very, very positive.
Well, I mean, I would have, if I were Trump, I think I would have said different things and said some of these things better. But I'm not Trump. Given his past performance in debates, which has not been stellar, I thought that this, and you were right to point out, his first debate with Hillary was very weak. This is a much stronger first debate. And if Trump keeps getting stronger from here, I think it's going to just be an absolute bloodbath in debates 2 and 3. So, and I don't see things reversing. I do think that, you know, Trump could be more articulate. There's no question about it. I wish that he had given Biden more time to trip himself up. But here's the thing. I do think that Biden was being such an unsympathetic person in the way that he was behaving. And right from the start, too, that I think Trump's instinct was just to counterpunch viciously every time he could, simply because I think he's sick of all the lies. And basically, everything Biden said was basically just premised on all the media lies are true. He was just repeating every CNN and MSNBC, BuzzFeed, all these mainstream media people's lies and half-truths as if they're facts. And, well, that's good if you're only... He was preaching to the choir, in other words. I think when he was talking about climate change and that, it's only cat ladies care about that kind of stuff, and he already has their votes. So I felt that overall, I mean, I could quibble with some of the things that Trump did, like I said, and I think you have very good points here. I think that it might have been one of the tactics that he had been coached to do, or it occurred to him himself. But I think because Biden began, and it was right in the first or second question, when instead of talking about the Supreme Court nomination, he just started spouting canned talking points about Obamacare and stuff like that. I found that very irritating. And I found, and that's really when the debate went off the rails. Up to that point, and this was pretty soon in the debate, but up to that point, it actually looked like they were trading arguments back and forth. But then it just started, I felt at a certain point that whenever Biden opened his mouth, it was like being trapped in an elevator with CNN being piped in. A very unpleasant experience. And a very unpleasant experience for normie centrist Americans who are undecided. Right? So anyway, it could have been better in some ways. Maybe you're right. I think Trump's instinct when Biden showed his hand to be irascible and basically just to go for the low blow talking points was just to start counterpunching furiously.
So Jason, you're very, very good at analyzing this kind of thing and very good at analyzing people's sort of body language. Were there any negatives you felt from Trump? Did you feel that Trump got anything wrong? Was he too bullish? Did he let you down in any way?
Well, gosh, thank you for saying that. There's so many things that to discuss, I mean, really to break down in the discussion here. And I want the Trump campaign to know that I will work gratis. So if they want to give me a call, I will work gratis. There's a lot that he could have done better. I guess I don't know if we're going to talk about maybe it later what Biden did well and where Biden could have done better or where there was just simply nothing more he could do. Because there are a couple things that he actually did really well. And I think it's obviously a product of the cocktail that he was given with these drugs prior to which they refused to the drug test. And that could have been something indeed that Trump could have mentioned.
I don't usually like to cut in, and I've just had a go at like Trump for cutting in and butting in. But you keep mentioning these drugs. So is there a drug test before the debates?
Trump's team called for a drug test for both candidates because when people are in dementia, they can be given, and it's something that is, it can't be regular because it would kill you. There are cocktails of amphetamines, several different types of drugs that people in dementia can be given, and they will function for a couple of hours with some measure of lucidity better than where they are in their dementia. And that sort of thing is usually used for legal matters, like they're going to have to sign a will or fill out a will. And so they give them these drugs to kind of bring them back for a couple hours, and they can then look over the legal work. And this is why Trump's team said, we would like a drug test for both candidates. They also asked for an ear test, and Biden's team to look for an earpiece. Biden's team said, sure, we'll do it. And then they denied, then they rejected. They said, no, we won't let you have a look at his ears or independent third party look at his ears. And now today, I think they're claiming that there wasn't even such a discussion. So it's just lies, as is typical.
Just again, another small interjection. I'm being a real Trump here. But do you think it is a credible suggestion that he did have an earpiece? Because I've seen this doing the rounds on the internet. do you think it's a credible suggestion?
Yes, without question. I mean, they all...
How would you hide something like that? Can you place these things inside the ear themselves?
Yes. Yes, all the way down into the ear canal. There's nothing visible on the outside. Wow. If you can buy... Yeah, senior citizens right now can buy hearing aids that are virtually invisible. They're not that nice. They will fit down into the ear canal, and they're just a couple $1,000s. And people of any age, of course, that have hearing problems. But normally people opt for the I think it's called, what are they called? It does have a slim little piece that is visible, but you really have to look closely because those are like $1,000 less. But the top end earpieces can fit all the way down into the ear canal. They're absolutely invisible. You'd have to look down into the ear to see it present. And they absolutely could transmit. And what they would do there, they wouldn't be telling him, somebody reads a sentence and then he recites the sentence. It would be a talking point. They would say, this issue, speak to that, speak to this. And then he would begin. And there were moments where it did appear that he had received a message. He was talking and then all of a sudden would stop. And it looked like he was giving his attention elsewhere. I believe he probably was. And that was to the voice in his head. That wasn't caused by his dementia, but was caused indeed by some brilliant anti-white operative sitting off somewhere behind stage saying, quick, this point, this issue. Because he went smartly from issue to issue in some places. And I think the person who was speaking in his ear was really expert because they didn't interfere otherwise interference would have tripped up Biden. And I'm sorry, Greg, did you want to say something to that?
Yeah, there's something. I'm looking at the debate. I remember this and it's looking at a transcript of the debate. And at a point, Biden says the following: by the way, I'm going to eliminate a significant number of the tax. I'm going to make the corporate tax 28%. It shouldn't be 21%. You have 91 companies, federal, I mean, in the Fortune 500 who don't pay a single penny in tax, making billions of dollars. He says 19 and then corrects himself to 91. That almost sounds to me like he's reading something off a teleprompter and correcting himself, because you don't transpose 19 and 91 normally, but you might if you're just reading something wrong off a teleprompter, or somebody's reading something wrong into his ear correcting himself. So that seemed odd to me.
Yeah. Yeah, without question, I think both things were, and we have to assume that both things were, in fact, that he was on this cocktail to give him a measure of lucidity that he hasn't seen in who knows how long, and somebody in his ear the entire time trying to correct him, especially when he gets the pieces of data wrong. But so there are plenty of things, I think. What could Trump have done better? Well, where did Trump drop the ball? He dropped the ball, certainly, and I briefly mentioned, when he wasn't citing all of these things that he has accomplished when he was talking about his positions. He dropped the ball, and this is more of a conservative sort of response to where he was dropping the ball. Where I think he really dropped the ball was when he talked about, there were a couple, two big, huge places. And as I said, Trump and your team, I'll work gratis. The first thing is that when he talked about the corruption, he was bringing up the corruption about Biden and his family. He should have expressed some measure of empathy for a family struggling with corrupt people, with sick people. And he should have said, I'm not trying to bring your family into this, but this is a demonstration of the corruption that you are in office. And then a sibling, a child, unfortunately, he had a rough go at life with cocaine and being discharged from the military. And then he ends up getting this job that he doesn't deserve to hold. I understand that families struggle with children and brothers and sisters who are having a rough go in life. But the way to take care of these people is not by getting them jobs in a corrupt, illegal way, making millions of dollars in foreign energy companies. And if he would have handled it that way, then people would have, I think, they would have, I guess, adopted, accepted, believed, and been moved by the criticisms and the threat of corruption of a Biden presidency a little more so than they were when Trump was just coming out. What about your son? And then just going back to how awful his son is, it just seemed a bit too pointed of an attack on the family rather than on Biden. And I can talk about this. This is where Trump missed the ball. There's two other places as well. But then the other thing that I was going to mention that was huge that Trump, I believe, absolutely failed to do, and that was every point that he did make, and I'm not talking about here the points that he did not make, which he could have made, but every point that he did make, he did not then, with perhaps an exception here or there, he did not then vector or pivot or fulcrum the point that he was making into how this issue harms you and you and you as individuals in America. So when he was talking about like the Biden shutting down the economy for COVID, he was talking about these things from the position of I'm the CEO, I'm the man in charge, I'm handling everything at the stratospheric level, and so individual lives aren't here. I just need to move the pieces around so that things go in the proper direction. The water flows in the right, the current flows in the right direction. Whereas he should have said. He should have made the point about Biden, for example, giving a specific example here about shutting down the entire economy. He said he's going to shut down the entire economy. And then what does that mean for you at home? That means you're not going to be able to go to work again. That means you're going to lose your job. That means the company that you work for is going to go out of business. Instead, Biden was able, and this is one of the points where he did really well, which is he looked directly into the camera more than a handful of times, talking to the people at home in a way as though he were sitting in their living room, brilliantly coached. And this is where probably an earpiece was probably very useful to him as well. He was able to deliver a handful of beautiful one-liners to the people at home. One of the examples he said was pointing out how when Trump had said something about it is what it is, talking about COVID-19, and Biden brilliantly said, it is what it is because you are who you are. That was an absolutely brilliant move by Biden and his handlers that Trump was just not making those. He wasn't revectoring this from the CEO level to the personal level. And it's the personal level that we here can understand the CEO level and what it means for us individually. But most folks, they might have the intellect to be able to do that, but they don't have the time or the inclination. They need it spelled out for them. And that was the other thing that I think Trump should have done when it comes to the discussion with Biden, is two very important things that would have sent a silent message. It would have sent almost a subconscious or almost a subliminal message to the electorate. And this is where these are huge. So Trump and team, if you're listening, this is what he needs to do in the next debates. If he gets an opportunity to even have those debates, and we can talk about that because of the Election Debate Commission and what they're looking into doing now and Biden's team. But what he absolutely should have done over the course of this debate is two things. He should have talked the entire time to Biden's handlers. He should have been talking the entire time of this is what they're going to make you do. This is what they're going to have you do. This is what the kind of people who are behind the scenes for Biden, this is what they want to achieve. Now, by doing that over the course of the debate, it would have made it very clear to the viewers, to the audience, that this guy is just a husk, that this guy is just a shell, that this guy is going to be led around by shadowy people whom you don't know who they are. And the reason why that is the case is because clearly he's incompetent. He can hardly string sentences together. He's fumbling over his words. He looks very sickly. So there is this group of people that are going to have to actually run the show for this incompetent person. And you would be saying, communicating that in a big way without saying it, communicating, which would be much more powerful, in a big way by talking every single issue about the people behind Biden, the handlers, the people that are going to be controlling things. The one other thing, and then I'll pass it back, that he could have done to achieve the exact same outcome, an unspoken way, convincing the people that this man is not competent And here there would have been the added benefit of demonstrating Trump as a compassionate human being would have been for Trump to help Biden when he got numbers and figures wrong. If when Biden said 2 million people or whatever died from whatever, if Trump would have then stepped in and said, no, I think you got those numbers, Joe, a little off. I think you want to say this many number, right? And then just be quiet and then let him continue. If he would have done this a couple times with Biden, are you actually trying to say this? I'll give you all the time you want to talk. I know you're struggling a bit. If he would have said things like that, it would have again demonstrated the incompetence of Biden, and in this case would have demonstrated the empathy of Donald Trump. But I'll pass it back.
So I think overall we all agree that it seemed to be good for Trump, but it could have been better. Now, before we go and start answering the entropy questions, remember, if you want to make a donation, if you want to ask a question, you can still do that. The link to Entropy is in the chat now. You can also help share the stream. That would be very, very helpful. Now, one other thing I wanted to bring up was when it came to COVID, I think Trump did pretty well. He not only put the blame on China, but when it was thrown to him that he'd handled it badly, he stated that Biden and the Democrats had actually called for a lockdown of the American people, but opposed his closure of the borders, calling him a xenophobe. And I think that was a very important point. And I'd have liked Trump to hit it home a little bit harder. But what he was basically saying was that the Democrats would rather lock down Americans and take away their rights than they would close the border and prevent migrants from coming into America. In other words, Democrats care more for the rights of migrants and for freedom of travel and freedom of movement than they do about the rights of Americans. And I think that was a really important point. I noticed it in there, but I just don't think he failed to make enough of that point. And it really shocked Biden. Biden reacted badly to that. He tried to lie his way out and say, oh, we never said that. But they did. Everyone knows the Democrats were up in arms as soon as Trump proposed a swift travel ban. And I think that was very much a nationalist talking point. It's something that I've said. It's something we've said here on the show, that the Conservative government here in Britain, they are absolutely willing and able to take away the rights of British people, have British people snooping on each other, lock them down, have them wearing masks. But at the same time, mass immigration continues at a greater level than we've ever seen it before. We have Preeti Patel, a woman who has been exposed in the past for having secret meetings with the Israeli government. She's behind this flood of migrants. Obviously, she's also loved by For Britain. They all think she's the best, the best thing since sliced bread, and that she was going to sort out the migrant mess. She's increasing the numbers of migrants coming in all the time when our freedoms are being taken away. And to hear Trump start pushing in that direction and making those points, I did like that. And this isn't to say he's perfect. Dion Moller, Secret Sources, made an important point today. She said, who is the big winner of the debate? It's Israel. Israel will be the winner no matter who triumphs in this election. But for Trump to be making these nationalist talking points is a very, very good sign. And it will get people talking about our talking points. And I'm not saying he's the great white hope. I'm not saying he should be the leader of our cause. I'm not saying we should all become Trump fans and start walking around in MAGA hats. But again, he was doing us a big favor by pointing that out. And before we go to the questions and answers, for the entropy questions, Greg, what were your thoughts on that specific part of the debate? Were you surprised to see Trump so ready to talk about those particular issues, issues that you and I would discuss here on PWR?
Yeah, I thought that was good. I thought Trump was really, really good on the COVID thing. There were a number of points he made. First of all, he did counterpunch very effectively by saying, you people were accusing me of racism and xenophobia for talking about closing the border with China, which would have cut it off if they had done that sooner. And there would have been a lot more Americans alive today if they had simply closed down air travel to China. A very simple, good point. But the Democrats in New York City, which had the worst COVID of all, the Democrats were saying, hug a Chinaman, practically. It was like in Italy, don't be afraid to go to the Chinese New Year because of this. It's bad for business and it's racist. They would have done the same thing, and he made a very effective point on that. Another thing that I thought was very good was he acknowledged that the lockdowns had a rationale when this was starting and we didn't know a lot about the disease. But then he said, no, we know a lot more about it. We know that it doesn't kill children. We know the kinds of people that are most at risk. We can have a much more surgical reaction to this now. We don't have to go back into lockdowns. A very, very good point. Another thing that I thought was very effective was the treatment of the mask issue. He said, yeah, I think masks are useful. I have one myself. And when he made fun of Biden for, you know, standing out on an empty field with a huge mask on, the biggest mask he's ever seen, he was basically saying, I think masks are good in context for actually eliminating, threats or risks, reducing risks. You are just treating it as a form of signaling. And I thought that was very effective. Trump was real about it. And he made Biden seem phony about it. And, you know, putting the threat of further lockdowns out there, which is what's the left want. It's what these Democratic state governors are imposing. And that is a real threat to a lot of people. People want this to be over with. Now, one thing I thought Chris Wallace did that was good and pro-Trump was pointing out that the recovery seems to be underway and rather rapidly in the United States, which supported Trump's contention that this is going to be a V-shaped recession. Now, I thought that Wallace, you know, that was a softball to Trump, and I think Trump handled it very effectively. The one thing connected, I should have said this earlier. One thing, of course, I didn't like to hear was the Dems are the real racist stuff that Trump came out with. The stuff about you call them super predators and all that. Fortunately, there was very little of that in this debate. One thing that was almost completely unmentioned in this debate, though, and this was actually a gift to Trump, was immigration, because that's a huge Well, there's a huge polarization point in America, and it's one thing on which Trump has failed. He's done some things, but he pinned so much on this wall that hasn't materialized. I kind of thought that was actually a giant gift to Trump not to talk about immigration. The only real allusion to that was just closing the borders for the COVID thing.
Yeah, he came off as strong on immigration by saying he wanted to close the borders straight away. But if Biden, you see, this is where if Biden was a sharp younger man, he'd be saying, well, Donald, you talk tough on immigration. And yeah, sure, you tried to close the borders when COVID broke out. But what happened to your wall? What happened to all your promises? And I think going on broken election promises would have done Donald Trump a lot more harm. But the problem is, Biden can't really say that, because the promises that Trump has broken are promises that Biden is happy that Trump's broken. And a lot of the promises that have been broken are down to frustration tactics that played out thanks to the Democrats really doing everything they can to frustrate Trump whenever he tries to do anything. And I think it was strange it never went to immigration. It went to law and order. And Trump, again, was very strong on that, saying that the Democrats had basically, he didn't specifically say it, but I think he said in a roundabout terms that the Democrats were allowing these riots to go on to damage the country. And I think he also said at one point, correct me if I'm wrong, we're going to go to the questions in a second, but he also said that Democrats were frustrating people all over the country by carrying on the lockdown long after it long after it should have ended, simply to harm the economy, to damage Trump's re-election. And I think a lot of the points he made, and this is very interesting, a lot of the points he made are points that more radical supporters of his make on his behalf on Twitter every day. His points wouldn't have been out of place if they were being made by Nick Fuentes or Michelle Malkin or other people who support him that he probably wouldn't ever share a stage with or wouldn't want to out and out publicly affiliate himself with. But making those points will please his core supporters. And one thing I've got to say at this point, and this is a very quick question, very quick before we go to the questions and answers. Is there anybody in America who hasn't made their mind up yet? Because when I watch these debates, I see them a little bit like a football match. If you go to watch Man United, Liverpool, is there anybody at the match who's undecided, who's there sat in the stands thinking, I wonder if Man United will win me over today with their plays. I wonder if Liverpool will show a bit more flair and I'll buy a Liverpool T-shirt at the end. Is there anyone sat in the middle? Or is everyone at the match already supporting one of those teams? And I think it's very much the same with these debates. There might be 1 or 2% swing voters at this point, but I believe society is incredibly polarized, more polarized than it's ever, ever been before. And I fundamentally believe that Donald Trump and Biden have either won or lost the election already. I think at this point, unless something ridiculous happened, unless something so horrific happened, like a tape came out of one of them abusing children or something like that. And in that case, I still don't think people would switch sides. I think if Republicans got hold of a tape of Trump doing something terrible, which was unforgivable, that wouldn't cause Republicans at this point to vote Joe Biden or Democrat. It would cause them just simply to stay at home and not vote Republican. Equally, I think if Biden did something absolutely terrible, if it was found that he'd done something horrific to an ethnic minority community, so dumped uranium under their playing field and killed all the young black athletes, I still don't think Democrats would vote Trump. I think they just wouldn't go out and vote Democrat. But I don't think anyone's switching sides at this point. Very quickly, what do you guys think about that? Greg, is anyone switching sides? Was there anyone watching who was undecided at this point?
Oh, I think there are a lot of people undecided. I think their mentality is hard for you and I to fathom. But yeah, there are lots of undecided people. They generally don't know what to do. There are a lot of people who hate the Republican Party. They hate the Republican Party. They think it's the party of the rich. It's the party of stuck-up people. But they don't like Joe Biden. They don't like what the Democrats have become. They are uncomfortable with Trump. And yet, I think a lot of these people are weighing in the privacy of their own minds, and they won't even tell their own wives that they're thinking this. And their wives are probably thinking the same thing, but won't tell their husbands that maybe they need to vote for Trump. I think a lot of people are in play right now. I think Trump's strategy, and I think this has been unfolding over the past 2 years, has not been to shore up his base and his populist nationalist bona fides. Well, he's certainly done a miserable job of that, but to run to the center and to trust the left going out of its mind and misbehaving to drive centrists towards him. I think that's happening. I think all this violence in the country has been manna from heaven for his campaign. I think it's somewhat sociopathic on his part to exploit it that way. But, you know, he's hiding behind federalism and saying, I can't do anything about all this. Of course he could. He doesn't really want to because he wants Democratic cities burning night after night on TV, because that's a great advertisement for why the left is dangerous to ordinary Americans. And I think that's pushing people in his direction. So I think that Trump's strategy of moving to the center and letting the left drive centrists into his fold is unfolding the way he foresaw it, which is kind of remarkable.
Thank you. Jason, quickly, do you think it's all over yet? You're like me. Do you think the vast majority of people have already picked a side? Is it already so partisan that there's very few people to win over? Or do you think, like Greg, that there's it's still all to play for?
I'm definitely leaning more toward Greg's direction on this one. There are quite a few folks. It's not only, and it's like Greg said, it's hard to fathom their thinking. And it's largely due to how ill-informed they are and the delusions that they live under. But they are there are a lot of voters who are, you might think of them as constitutionalists, libertarians, independents. They put their beak into the water of politics rarely, and they're just going to check in just enough to see whether or not they, I mean, maybe as much as somebody who might want to bet like $5 on a game somewhere, it's still $5, but they want to know something about both of the teams. So to go back to the team kind of scenario that Mark's talking about here, they want to know something about the teams, and they want to find, you know, so they're going to watch a debate. They're going to maybe read an article or two to and that'll be it to make up their minds about who runs the country. But I think that's a huge chunk of people. But more importantly than just that chunk of people that we're talking about here is the chunk of Democrats, particularly white Democrats, who are thinking, I'm just not going to go to the polls. I'm just not even going to vote because this is I don't want any more of the cities on fire. I don't like Trump, but we cannot have more of what the Democrat governors and mayors and the like, what they're demanding for the country. We can't have the country shut down again. And I'm very confident that that a significant percentage of those people, once Barrett is confirmed as Supreme Court Justice, they're simply not going to bother to head to the polls. And that will be it for the election. So I said a couple of weeks ago, you know, and this was in play, and then I'll pass it right back. This has been in play, Ruth Bader Ginsburg and her death over the next 4 years. But it was in play for the anti-white oligarchs. It was in play for the intelligentsia anti-whites, because they knew she's going to die, no doubt, within the next 4 years. And so the president, whoever it is, will be able to select her successor. And they, of course, wanted to be an anti-white judge because they have opted for a strategy of legislating from the bench. It's illegal. It doesn't matter because too many power nodes in the country are held by anti-white. So there's really nothing that those who are white positive or right wing or whatever that they can really do about it. When I was on the Hill, that was one of the things. We read judicial opinions and then gave our suggestions for federal judgeships to the White House. And so in the conservative world, it was, are they obeying the law? And this is what I said, if you're going to allow them to legislate from the bench and you not legislate from the bench, you can't win this game. Because they'll just legislate that they're allowed to, go back to the sports analogy, run out of bounds, but you're not. And that would be the way it moves forward. Now, back to the issue. The intelligentsia knew that Ruth Bader Ginsburg was going to be an issue over the next 4 years, but they could not communicate that to their dumb masses. To the average masses, they couldn't communicate that in a way that would motivate them to get to the polls. So they couldn't say, well, at maybe 3 years from now, maybe 2 years from now, Ruth finally dies. And if you don't go to the polls and vote, these people would say, well, that's off in the distance. Many of them are going to say, what's the Supreme Court justice? I mean, that's the kind of population that you're dealing with. Her dying, though, put this in salient relief for the totality of anti-whites who call themselves Democrats and of various stripes, who then suddenly realized, oh my God, they're able to understand that Trump is going to be selecting this power seat that we don't even know really what it means, but it's super powerful in its lifetime. So I wasn't going to go vote, but now I am. So what needed to happen, and the Republicans clearly realize this, and the ones that are behind the Republicans clearly realize this, they want more of their leadership, more of them in power, clearly realized that if they could nominate and confirm, and just for the first time, I think, really, for the Republican Party, I must say, for the when I was on the Hill, nothing like this even came remotely close to happening. And that is Republicans saying, we don't care what you think is ethical in governance. We don't care what you think is the right or wrong thing to do. There isn't a law here to prevent us from doing it. And so we are just going to go ahead and do it. The Republicans are overcoming this sort of overly genteel mentality because they know that if they nominate and confirm a Supreme Court justice, all of those people that suddenly realized Democrat, actually registered Democrat voters, a great percentage of them, that suddenly realized, oh my God, I need to vote so we can fill this empty seat, that they realized that if they nominate and confirm Barrett and get a moderately conservative or whatever she is on the bench, or at least she's not radically anti-white, that the wind will be completely out of the sails of these people. If anything, they'll feel the wind, a headwind filling their sails, pushing them backwards. And they will go right back to saying, I'm not going to bother going out to the polls, stand around, potentially get COVID-19. Remember, it's their news media that's telling them day after day that they believe firmly that all they have to do is get within 100 yards of somebody and magically they got COVID-19. These are the ones you see in their cars. I know we've all seen them where they have the mask, the goggles, and a shield alone in their car. That's who these people are. So they're going to say, I'm just going to stay home. He's got his Supreme Court justice. There's nothing we can do with this election. I pass it back.
Thank you, Jason. Let's do some of these super chats, all of the super chats, in fact, and the questions. If you haven't super chatted yet, or if you haven't shared the show, please do both. The link to the Entropy is in the chat, and you can share the link to this. We've had around 1,700 people watching already. Let's keep new people coming in. Great, great numbers tonight. And I think that number will ramp up over the next few weeks as things hot up in America. Serena JB gave £3. Thank you very much. In keeping with the black mailboxes celebrating Black History Month, I suggest we all wear black shirts as our tribute. Well, I love wearing a black shirt and I can certainly recommend it. That's going to get clipped out. And my future response to this being clipped out is I don't care. Junta Mominari gave $3. Thank you very much. And he said, with Serbia forced by the US empire to make peace with Kosovo, recognize Israel and decriminalize homosexuality, do you think Eastern Europe should join the Chinese sphere of influence instead? Well, thank you very much for the super chat. No, I don't. I don't think anyone should bow to China instead of bowing to America. But they shouldn't simply be bowing to America either. America has been post-Second World War, I believe, a cancer on the world. I think the influence of America has brought nothing good to other Western nations. And every sickness that America has embraced has eventually infected other Western nations, starting with Western Europe and now going into Eastern Europe. And I believe that ultimately countries like Serbia need to stay strong, but they shouldn't substitute one foreign ruler with another. They should seek their own independence. Any thoughts on this, guys? Have I gone too far with my condemnation of American culture and what it's done to the Western world? Or do you guys agree?
Well, I'm pretty much in agreement. I kind of hate what America has become. I do think the hamburger is a great contribution to Western civilization and you know, a few American writers and painters and things like that. But yeah, I think mostly in the 20th century, the United States has been a negative force in the world because it's been the primary conduit for globalism and all of its other associated ills. And honestly, if the United States is in permanent decline, and I do believe that we have crossed the zenith and we are now in decline, I think 2020 is the year when America started dying. I think that if Joe Biden is elected president, a lot of people around the world are just going to quietly write the country off as a joke. So I do think that that is not actually a bad thing because America is such a force for evil in the world. And a less powerful America, a less interventionist America, a less imperialist America means, for instance, that nationalism will face fewer enemies in Europe. And that's important because Europe is the cradle of our race and civilization. We have to save Europe, and America is the enemy of Europe.
Thank you. Very candid thoughts there. Jason, has America had a negative influence on the Western world, and should Serbia tell them where to go, or should they accept U.S. imperialism?
Pithily, I will just say that America is a manifestation of our biospirit. So we're misnaming the anti-white domination of a superpower. This would be the consequence of any superpower dominated by anti-whites. So America is in all of us, whether born in the UK or Australia or whatever, because it's a product of Western civilization. And it is a part of the recapture of our destiny to recapture that which we have created, and preserve. But yeah, without question, anti-whites, whether they have little power in a country like Serbia or great power in a country like the United States, are poisonous in every sense of the word. And so wherever they seek to exert that influence, they should be resisted.
I agree. Well, let's move on. Junta Momonari gave $20. Thank you very much, my friend. And he says, as long as the US harbinger of the values of Zionism, liberalism, and its offshoots of universalism, multiculturalism, and finance capitalism has international hegemony, the ceiling on movements of national sovereignty and tradition is hopelessly limited. Any country able to break apart the unipolar world of US dominance is good. Well, thank you very much, my friend. The Thin Red Line gave $10. And Millie said, happy birthday, Mark. Well, thank you very much. The first birthday super chat. It's not great to be 40, but hopefully I've got a few years left in me yet. Respawn gave £10. Thank you very much, my friend. He said, may the patriotic alternative plan be implemented successfully. Indeed, it is truly a plan to save our people. Thank you very much. Jekaterio gave £3. Thank you very much, my friend. He said, happy birthday, Mark. May the years ahead of you bring happiness. Well, hopefully. I will say this. I think one of the best things, last year, obviously, my daughter was here, but this year, she's a little bit older. And I must say, as she grows up and as I spend more time with her and do more with her, nothing brings me as much happiness as the time I spend with Sophia. And it's just little things that she does which are just so adorable. And it really is the greatest blessing you can have, to have a child. And I've got to say that as I get older, I think ultimately nothing means more than family. And waking up in the morning and hearing my daughter sort of pad around on the landing saying, dad, dad, and waiting for me to sort of come down and give her a cuddle and, you know, play with her and take her down for a breakfast. That is the greatest. And I think the thing that will make me most happy on my birthday is definitely seeing Sophia's smile and having a big birthday hug from her. So that's a bit of 40-year-old, almost 40-year-old fatherly wisdom for you. Stanley Sloggett gave £10 and he said, do you think you will see an improvement in the social tensions currently seen in the USA if Trump retains his presidency? No, I think if Trump gets in for a second term, it won't be misfits screaming in the streets and having little comedy breakdowns that we can all laugh about. I think every heavily enriched city will go up in flames. I think this is going to be the accelerationist's wet dream. If Trump gets in, you are going to see serious civil strife, and you're going to see something which won't quite be a second civil war, but I think many people in the press and on both sides of the divide will refer to it as that. And it's going to make what's happening in Portland look like a very tame dress rehearsal, What do you think, Greg and Jason? Brief thoughts. Do you think that if Trump gets in, things will calm down? Or do you think if he gets a second term, the fires will rise?
Obviously, the left is going to go completely insane. I think the best outcome for me as a person who wants acceleration and polarization at this point is for Trump to get reelected somewhat narrowly and for the left to go completely insane and actually try and mount a color revolution and be openly calling for some kind of coup. I think that would be enormously helpful. So, I think it's going to be a complete madhouse in America. We're not going to know who the new president is on election night. That's simply not going to happen. It's going to drag on for weeks and weeks and maybe months. And this is absolutely going to be fascinating to watch. Everyone wants this election to be over. But it's not going to be over for a long time after Election Day. No matter who wins, the other side is going to contest the results. And no matter what happens in the official process of contesting the results, the other side isn't really going to accept it. The legitimacy of the American system is basically broken at this point, and it's never going to come back.
Jason, your thoughts, my friend. But before you give them, I'm going to disagree with Greg. I think Trump could well win by a similar or greater margin, not in terms of the popular vote, but in terms of representatives elected, the way the American system works.
Sorry? American college.
Yeah, in terms college, of college votes, mm-hmm. simply because I believe that what has gone on in the last few months in terms of Black Lives Matter will put the fear of God in many law-abiding Americans who don't want their cities to burn and think that if they don't vote Trump, their right to defend themselves will be taken away by the left. I don't think it's going to be a long drawn out affair, but we will see. We will see. And people will obviously clip this out and our predictions will be thrown back in our faces. But Jason, your thoughts on the initial question?
I concur that when Trump wins, because I've been of the opinion that he is going to win for every reason you just cited there and more, they're going to be exactly. I concur with Greg. It's going to be and you, Mark. There's going to be a great deal of upheaval and challenging, and I think it's and for months as well. And there's going to be a lot of rigging as well, a lot of corruption with throwing votes away that belong to Trump. It's already happening. We're seeing that take place. Double votes for Democrats. So there's going to be a lot of legal. Legalisms as well that both parties are going to be engaged in, and it's going to be who knows what's going to happen with Biden. His senility is rapidly overtaking him. But I'll just sum up by saying that there's a distinct possibility that after the victory, especially a significantly sized victory, the Democrats will still try to challenge this. It's possible that Trump then moves like it is his last 4 years to ever take any steps and does some real damage to those who are trying to harm him and undercut him, everything he's trying to do and his legacy. That's what it'll mean for him at that point. I'll pass it back.
Thank you. The Thin Red Line gave $3 and says, do you think the DNC will allow any more debates? Thank you for the super chat, my friend. I think the DNC will allow more debates. I think it's so ingrained in American culture, the presidential debates, that any side that didn't take part would actually really damage. If there are any floating voters, which Greg and Jason think there are plenty of, I think not taking part in the debate would severely damage any presidential candidate. Because if there's one good thing about America and one good thing about American culture that kind of is always there and always will be, Americans love big, brash, strong, alpha men. That is something that has always been part of this American dream. And it was especially front and center in Hollywood when I was young. You had Schwarzenegger, Stallone, the action hero. They like the guy that can take on the world and win. And I think if a presidential candidate or if one side decided to pull out and said that they were that weak, they daren't face their enemy head on, I think that would go against that underlying American spirit, one of the last few positives of the American spirit. So I think the debates will go ahead. I think it'd be disastrous for the side that pulled out. You guys, what do you think? Will the debates be canceled or will they go ahead?
Well, I think it's very, very telling what the mainstream media is saying about this debate. First of all, I haven't noticed any leftist saying that Biden won. And you know that they are wanting to say that he won, but he so obviously did poorly that the best they can plausibly say is that it was a draw. And then they try and frame everything in terms of Trump being boorish, et cetera, et cetera. But a lot of people are saying he shouldn't do any more debates. I mean, these people were going to declare this a victory if Biden's depends held out. They were going to declare a victory if it was at all possible, right? And they couldn't do that. And now their voice is coming forward saying, Trump is such a liar. This is a farce. He's so rude. He's orange man bad. You should not debate this guy anymore. It's obvious they think that if Trump gets better and better, it's just going to be a bloodbath. So I think there's a lot of pressure on Biden not to debate, and he probably doesn't want to because he's not up to it. But we shall see what happens. I think it would be a terrible mistake for the Democrats not to debate, but they might, they know what's up with this guy better than we do. And they just might think, I'm sorry, he's not up to debating. But then the question becomes, why did you put this guy up to begin with? It is such an act of consummate arrogance on these people's part. They basically think that the American voter are a bunch of morons, that they can completely control the entire election through the media at a distance, and that they just don't have, they can phone it in, and they can put a ham sandwich up against Donald Trump and get him elected. This is consummate arrogance. It's hubris. And I hope Donald Trump is their nemesis. But who knows what kind of rationality goes on in the back scenes. Are there wise elders of the Democratic Party? Who's really making the decisions here? It's a real black box of what's going on inside this party. But the fact that this senile, nasty old geezer has been nominated does not bode well for the future of the Democratic Party.
I'll just briefly say, well, should we just keep rolling then maybe? Maybe we'll just, because we have more questions, don't we?
We've got a very good question for you coming up, Jason, so I'm looking forward to that one.
Okay.
Now, Regnar X Duma X gave $10 and he said, woo, I was going to pay for you to talk about the debates. Good thing I saved my money. Thank you for the very deep analysis. Well, thank you for the super chat. And I'm pleased that we delivered on a thorough analysis of this first debate. A blunderbuss gave $25. Thank you very much. Generous donation there. Very much appreciated. And he said, I wish Mike Enoch had been on the stage last night. Don't we all? I think the ultimate combo would be an Enoch-Duke combo. The only problem with an Enoch-Duke combo is Duke would prevent Enoch from speaking. But I think Mike Enoch is a spectacular talented man. And when he debates and when he speaks, I don't think there's anyone who speaks with the kind of clarity he does. And he would have been amazing last night. Thank you. David Peterson gave £50. Thank you very much. Very generous donation there. Very, very much appreciated. Thank you, my friend. He said, happy birthday, Mark. Thank you. How can we push back against discriminatory slurs against our people, e.g. white privilege, white fragility, that are increasingly pervading our national cultural narrative and all our Western institutions? How can we do so safely without being branded racist and losing our jobs for heresy? Discuss. Well, I think we can push back against this because most normal people hate them. I've never met a normal person. And when I say a normal person, I've never gone about my daily life in a supermarket or at the barbers or amongst people who live on my street who I speak to and they occasionally talk to me about politics. I've never met a normal person who agrees with any of those things. So I would say it's like pushing at an open door. White people don't want to be called racist, but they also don't want to be accused of crimes that they've never committed. And they don't like being told that they are evil. They don't like being told they're second-class citizens. They don't like the idea of white guilt. And the fact it's pushed on them so readily is a major, major recruiter for us. But when it comes to talking about it at work, I think that's another thing altogether. And I would say that I would really, really think twice if you're working in a sensitive position about talking about anything political at work, especially if you're on our side of the fence. I would talk about these issues with people at the pub, like I said, at the barbers, if somebody brings it up in the supermarket at the checkout, if people talk about it to you on a train when they're sat next to you. And I've had plenty of people just start talking to me recently about issues that I've never, ever heard the public talk about before so freely. People have been talking about the Black Lives Matter riots. People have been talking about mass immigration. They've been talking about government tyranny. I've had more and more normal people talk to me about things that were seen as conspiracy theories, told me they've watched documentaries on YouTube about certain things, either historical things, 9/11, and they're thinking outside the box. And I think talking to those people and engaging them is absolutely something you should do and something that all of our people should engage in. We should talk to normies. We should broach these subjects with normies, especially if they're starting to broach these subjects with us. But I would say keep them out of the workplace. Don't give your employer any excuse to fire you, especially at a time like this when employers are cutting back so heavily because of the economic contraction, because of the fact that the COVID lockdowns mean people aren't going out shopping, people aren't spending money. I think it's very important that you protect your income in that sense. So I hope that's a comprehensive answer. Speak about it a lot, but outside of work. Greg, Jason, what are your thoughts on this important topic?
I just want to say dittos, Mark.
Well, thank you. That was very short. Jason, any thought?
Same thing. Agree completely.
Thank you. Well, thank you very much, David, for the very generous super chat and the birthday wishes. I hope that's a good answer. Keep your head down at work, mate, but talk to all your friends and talk to everyone in the supermarket queue and people outside of work. Spread the word, but ensure your financial safety, my friend, because that does matter. And this cause is, it's in all our hearts, but I don't want to see anyone not being able to put food on the table because they pushed something too hard at work. Blunderbuss gave $25. Thank you very much. Another generous donation. He said, Spencer changed teams pretty late in the game, so there are definitely swing voters out there. Well, I'm not throwing this one out, but what I will say is I was slightly disappointed to see Richard Spencer supporting Biden. I can understand people saying they wouldn't vote for either, but saying that they would support Biden when Biden is really a Trojan horse for Kamala Harris. And I believe that a Biden-Harris presidency would see the end of potentially the First and Second Amendment. I can't support them in any way. I take it you echo that. Ah, go on. I'll be a bit cantankerous. I take it you echo that, Greg.
Yeah, I completely echo that. There was one thing in the debate, and I just found this in the transcript that I thought was hilarious. Biden, sounding really nasty and brittle, said, "My party is me. Right now, I am the Democratic Party." And Trump says, "And they're going to dominate you, Joe. You know that." I am the Democratic Party right now, the platform of the Democratic Party, not according to Harris. I love that. He really, this was early on in the debate, he really did needle him a bit about the fact that he's not really in control and would not be in control.
I agree. Jez gave $10. Thank you, my friend. And he said, my garden's coming on nicely. Maybe some help to finish it off as a present for my 37th. Smiley face. Yes, times are that hard in the Collett household. He is now digging out his friend's gardens for a mere $10 super chat. For every super chat Jez gives me, I do 2 hours gardening work, digging out 12-meter trenches in his garden and filling them with blue slate. There is some jesting there. Times aren't really that hard, but there is some truth there. I have been helping Jez with his garden. It is very good exercise, and he is very generous with the well-chilled Coke Zeros that keeps my morale high when I'm digging his garden out for him. And it will be good to see you again soon, Jez. This lockdown has been too harsh, and I always look forward to our days out, even though you are somebody who steals all of the chips if the chips are a shared side. Phil Barker gave $5. Thank you very much, my friend. And he said, is there any example of a liberal democratic society that is currently doing well socially and culturally? People seem totally committed to liberalism, even though it leads to social conflict and cultural decay elsewhere. Well, I think that's more of a statement than a question, because unless anyone can counter signal me on this, I don't think there is a single example of a socially liberal country which isn't tearing itself apart because of those policies. And unless anyone can correct me, which I don't think they can, we shall move on. Thank you for the super chat. For Camaraderie gave $5. Thank you very much. He said, good evening, Mark, Jason, and Greg. Jason, you need new balloons. This is the question. He says he will donate another $50 if you get one off the wall and inhale it. Now, at this point, Jason, I have to say, if you don't pop one of those balloons and proceed to at least eat some of it, I'm going to have to fire you now. Only joking.
Yeah. Actually, when it comes to a funny question, I'll just briefly say that there was an incident back when I was in Boy Scouts as a child, and people were inhaling helium, and you know their voices would get wild. And a physician was there, one of the fathers of the Scouts, and I think many people have probably done this, the helium thing and the laughter. The physician came over and told us that it can actually cause like an embolism or something. It can do something in the back of your throat, and it's actually quite dangerous. And he's treated people who have had this happen to them. So that would be wonderful for video, wouldn't it? I suck in some helium and then have some vein or something pop in the back of my throat and dead instantly. There are plenty of anti-whites who would be happy about that, but I don't know. I'll have to think about it for the rest of the show.
You've never inhaled helium?
No, we did when I was young, yes. But this is when the doctor came over and said, what are you guys doing? This is actually quite dangerous.
I can tell you this. When it was Sophia's first birthday, we got all helium balloons. And as they were coming down, my lady said to me, those need to go out, Mark. They're half inflated now. They look a mess. And I took a knife to one of them and made a little incision and basically swallowed as much helium as I literally could. And my voice was obviously changed quite a bit. And it did give both my lady and Sophia a huge giggling fit. So I do think it is quite amusing. I'm obviously not going to force you to do it. But my little girl found it quite startling that all of a sudden I was speaking in such a funny voice. And my rendition of Twinkle, Twinkle, Little Star certainly did increase her grin. It is a very, very amusing thing, especially for little ones. But as I said, no pressure here, Jason. No pressure. Now on to the non-paid super chats. Rory Herbert said, my wife posted her absentee ballot paper voting for Trump Pence from the UK Today. Do you think there is a danger of her letter being rejected by the United States Postal Service? I think there is. I don't trust postal ballots. I don't like the increasing reliance on postal ballots. I think this is a really bad thing. I think Trump is being very, very on point about potential electoral fraud, but I'm not an American. What do you guys think? Do you think there is a chance that absentee ballots from abroad will go missing?
I think anything is possible. I don't think that that's the most likely thing. I think the most, because they would have to open the ballot, read it, see it's for Trump and discard it. That's very difficult to do. There are monitors at these things. The most likely thing is that states like Washington State, which mail ballots out to people, that is a huge, huge opportunity for fraud. I remember when I was living in Seattle, it was the election time coming up, and in the lobby of my, it was midterm election time, and in the lobby of my apartment building, there were all these boxes, the PO box, the post boxes, and I remember seeing, I received four ballots that were sent to me that were the ballots of the people who lived in the apartment before me. I could have filled all of those out and probably sent them in and nobody would have been the wiser. There was a waste basket near the post boxes filled with ballots that had been sent to the wrong boxes. Okay. And that people had just dumped. It was a student area. There's a lot of turnover. I went over to the local post office, and the trash in the post office was filled with these ballots. People can collect those ballots and fill those out. And the state of Washington is notoriously corrupt. King County, which is the county in which Seattle is, you know, predominantly white. And yet it votes like Detroit. Why? Ballot fraud. There have been cases where cars have been found with their trunks stuffed with ballots in King County. And what happens is this: they will get these ballots and they will fill them out. And if they need to use the fraudulent ballots to tip the election, they'll bring them out. They won't just bring them out if they don't need them, because obviously there's a risk involved in doing this. And if it's not necessary, then they won't do it. But there's a lot of election fraud in America, and mail and ballots that are simply mailed to every registered voter are harvested and regularly used for election fraud. It's a massive problem. And this will be a very, very close election. In some states, it's going to be razor thin. In any of those states where it's razor thin, it could come down to a trunkload of harvested, falsified ballots being suddenly brought in and thrown in the bin. And it'll change the direction of the thing. So it has to be taken very seriously. One of the big objections to Trump that I had in his first term is he knew about this 4 years ago and didn't get on it, right? It's only in the past 6 months that there's been real talk of election fraud. He should have had that dealt with within the first 2 years of his presidency. And like many, many things, it was allowed to slide. You know, it was always easier to go and just give Israel stuff than it is to go up against the corruption of the American political system. And so Trump took the path of least resistance, unfortunately, and it could do him in this election.
Yeah, there's going to be a lot of fraud when it comes to these mail-in ballots. That's the purpose of it. That's the reason why the Democrats are pushing it. That what they're going to do is they're going to send double, and they've already been caught doing this, ballots out to what they know to be Democrat areas, so people will be counted twice. And they're able to know this because all of these districts are carved out. They know what's Democrat. They know what's Republican. They'll be collecting ballots, as we've already seen, in Republican areas, and then throwing those away. Sure, there'll be some Democrat votes in there, but the majority of them are going to be from Republican areas, are going to be Trump votes. And so they count on those being something that should be thrown away as a consequence. It's going to be quite a bit of fraud, as Greg just said. And finally, the other point I wanted to make about the helium is I eat the helium today for $50. And then tomorrow, next show, it's $100. If you don't do this for Mark, $100, it's stand on your head for $150. So that's simply not going to be able to happen.
Jason, simply not good enough. Won't eat balloons today. What will it be tomorrow? You'll be bossing me around. You'll be the host, won't you? It's like you're setting the agenda. This is obviously a joke. Jason is not in any way forced or coerced to eat any balloon or anything else for that matter on this show. Connor Chickmeister asked, is it fair to say that David Curtin's new Heritage Party is little more than controlled opposition serving to prevent Brits from finding genuine nationalism a patriotic alternative? There's so many spoiler parties out there. This new party, David Curtin, for anyone who doesn't know, is a black assembly member on the Greater London Assembly. He started a Heritage Party. I believe that Lawrence Fox, the based centrist, is starting his own party called Reclaim. There are so many of these small parties popping up. Apparently Nigel Farage is deciding on one of two different directions. One would be an anti-lockdown party. The other would be a anti-illegal immigration party. And all of these things, I believe, are done to essentially frustrate ethno-nationalist parties. But that's why Patriotic Alternative is important, because Patriotic Alternative isn't just an electoral vehicle. Elections are an important string to our bow, but they aren't the be-all and end-all. We have always said that at the heart of Patriotic Alternative is community building and bringing together like-minded people so that like-minded people can sit in pleasant environments and talk about important issues. And it's also important to note that there are all of these soft options popping up. You've got the For Britain movement. You've got this new Heritage Party. Sargon's wetting his pants in absolute delight at the idea of Lawrence Fox starting a base centrist party, which predictions, if Sargon tries to join, Lawrence Fox will ban him publicly for his tweets and his liberal use of the N-word, which will be absolutely hilarious. But obviously, all of these groups will cuck on everything. And one thing that Patriotic Alternative won't do is cuck. And this obviously displeases some people, because some people think that for instant results, you need to bend over and start groveling. But I believe that all of these spoiler parties will fight it out in the no man's land of centrism and sitting on the fence and proving how they're not racist. But we will stand out by boldly advocating for the rights of those of European descent and refusing to kowtow to liberals on any of the talking points that all these other much more watered down alternatives will grovel on. So I'm hoping that, well, I know this will have no effect on PA, because I can't think any normal person who was going to join an openly ethno-nationalist group would be fooled by a party called the apparently Heritage Party that is run by someone who isn't even of European descent. And whilst I must make this clear that there are people who aren't of European descent who attend Patriotic Alternative events, we are not an organization that would endorse the kind of tokenism that these other so-called patriotic movements do. So thank you for that question. We've got another question that's for me. This is for Alexander, from Alexander G. Hoffman. He says, are other Europeans currently living in the UK welcome to join you guys in hikes, camping trips, or any other activities organized by PA regional groups? Of course you are. PA regional groups are open to all people of European descent. And when we hold conferences and events, we usually get people from overseas coming to those events. So you would be more than welcome. We have several regional groups up and running already, and we have a whole show on Friday night, myself and Laura, where we will be discussing the leaps and bounds we've made with PA recently and how we are making further inroads in setting up regional groups all over the UK. The only thing that's still frustrating that to some degree is COVID, but we do have a lot of announcements to make on Friday night on a special show that starts at 7 p.m. UK time. And we have one last question, and this is for Greg. And he says, it's from James. It says, Greg, rank the non-European Americans in terms of hostility to the European heritage of America. Jews, American, Blacks, Africans, East Asians, Hispanics, and those from the Indian subcontinent. Who are the most hostile to those of European heritage?
Jews are definitely the most hostile. I think Blacks are up there. And all the rest are sort of a mixed bag, but they go lower in the rankings, definitely.
Well, thank you very much. Well, that about brings us close to the end of the show. And it's been a good show. I think it's been a really robust discussion on the debates. Obviously, there will be more discussion on the debates to come. And next week, we have Styx Hexenhammer on. It'll be very interesting talking to him again. And I'm sure he'll have lots of very interesting takes on the Trump re-election campaign. I know he is a big Trump fan. And after this show at 9 p.m., which is only 5 minutes away, the White Art Collective will be live here on DLive. So make sure you join them if you want more excellent nationalist content. Now, before we close up, Greg, do you have any final thoughts, my friend?
I think the debate made this race a lot more interesting for me. I was really kind of very tired of Trump. I thought his positions were very, very bad, very weak. I was really finding this entire contest to be really boring and kind of depressing, because it would really be shattering to me that America elects Joe Biden and his handlers, his controllers. It would just be the end of America as a serious country. And although I can see some upsides to that for the other parts of the white world and the world as a whole, really, I frankly, as an American, find that kind of depressing. You know, I wish that I had lived at the peak of America's greatness rather than to live while it's been in rapid decline. So anyway, I do think this has become a much more serious and interesting race. I'm starting to think that Trump might actually be able to pull this out and win it. And that's kind of exciting for me. But in terms of what I'm going to do and what our movement is going to do, it doesn't really matter whether Trump or Biden gets elected, because we're going to have to do the same stuff, right? We're going to have to continue putting our ideas out there, not just root for Republicans, right? We have to put our own ideas, our own spin out there. We have to build our institutions. We have to feather our own nest. We have to build up our movement, broaden it, bring new people in. That doesn't change. And insofar as the election is a useful tool for getting people to listen to us and bring people in, I think it's something that's worth commenting about. And that's why I comment about it. But ultimately, it's up to us to save white America. It's up to us to save white Britain. It's up to white people, race-conscious white people, to save their own nations. These center-right parties are not going to do it.
Well, thank you very much, Greg. As always, it's been a great pleasure having you here on the show tonight. You're always a phenomenal guest, a phenomenal content creator. We obviously wish you all the best. And if you want to check out Greg's work, please do so at Countercurrents, one of the world's, or if not the world's, premier white positive publishing house. Jason, any final thoughts, my friend? And would you like to plug TAP before I plug the great debate tomorrow night?
Yes, yes. We'll let you do that, sir. TAP on Friday around 5 or 5:30 p.m. Eastern Standard Time with the great Tim Murdoch, talking about meme magic and that sort of business. And I will say this about this election. I could be wrong. I might be wrong about this. I think it's in the Disarm Hate Act that Biden and team, if he were to win the presidency, they would push through. The Republicans, with a thin margin in the Senate, would not have the ability to stop this from happening, especially with some of the verbiage they have in there. And with that power, they would be redefining white nationalist, or whatever you might want to call yourself. They would, of course, call you all white supremacist groups. I'm sure PA would be included in this, but a great many other groups, NPD certainly, and groups like this around the world, across the West, would be redefined by the federal government of the United States as international terrorist organizations that are threats to the United States. And by designating them thus, the United States would then, and they would be right alongside of ISIS, the United States would be using its power to cripple, undermine, and weaken these organizations and these entities wherever they exist. And then communication between the United States and anybody in the United States and anybody in those organizations would enable law enforcement in the United States to treat those American citizens as cohorts with those terrorist, now terrorist-defined organizations. It would really change things in a very big way. So everyone has a stake in this election between Donald Trump and Joe the crazy Biden. And I'll pass it back.
Well, thank you very much, Jason. Now, before we close up tonight, don't forget White Art Collective are on next. And do not forget tomorrow night. It'll be here on this channel. The debate will take place here. Jason is the moderator of this debate. And although it'll be taking place on my channel, Jason will have control of the channel and thus will be able to mute both myself and Ghazi. We will be discussing, or the debate will be on, the future of race relations in the West. It will be a formal debate. The exact format of it is pretty much set in stone. We will both get a 4 to 5 minute opening statement, followed by 2 to 3 minute sections, which Jason will time and warn us when we're 30 seconds out. We will formalize that 30 minutes before, and afterwards it will be questions and answers. So we're thinking there'll be something like 70 to 80 minutes of debate with 40 minutes of questions and answers. And those questions will be taken through Entropy, and the best questions will be asked out by Jason, and myself and Ghazi will be able to give very brief answers to those. So I'm hoping that will be good. It'll be here tomorrow night, 9 p.m. UK time. Obviously, I'll be tweeting it out through the day. I will also have that advertised on other social networks. That just leaves me to say thank you so much to everyone. Thank you to Greg. Thank you to Jason. Thank you to everyone who sent me kind birthday wishes, and also to all of those who donated so generously. Thank you so much. It really, really does warm my heart that people dig so deep for this show and to help keep the wheels on the wagon. Now, as always, the biggest thank you goes out to this amazing audience. At peak tonight, we had around 1,700 viewers on here on DLive. It was an amazing show, great analysis. Thank you so much to everyone, and I hope you have a wonderful night, and I hope to see you all here tomorrow for the debate. Thank you so much. Stay safe, and I will see you all tomorrow. Have a great evening.